The Gaming on Linux podcast. We are here with some fine gentlemen, as always. I'm one of them. If you want to call me a gentleman, you got me wrong. Matthew Cross, also known as Dark1778. And guys, introduce yourselves.
Hi, my name is Cheese.
Succinct.
Yep.
In that same vein, hi, my name is Kieran, or Mad Machinations.
And the date today is April 23rd of this recording. So,
if you're in Awesome Land, it's April 24th.
Sorry for those of us that are ahead, you are correct. We will correct this and say it is April 23rd / April 24th. There.
It's fine.
Okay, so this podcast, we are talking about Left 4 Dead. Left 4 Dead 2, let me rephrase it, because the first one, A, is not available on Linux, and B, is not nearly as good as the second one.
Really? So, I prefer the first one.
Yeah,
I love Left 4 Dead 1.
Pretty much everything I've seen about Left 4 Dead 2, everyone says it's way better than the first one.
I much more
enjoy the handling, and I kind of prefer just the Left 4 Dead 1 specials, like the tactical roles that they fill, in terms of like pushing the player in particular directions and stuff.
Yeah. Alright, I can see that. I can see where you're going with that.
They're all still present in the second game, but the addition of the Left 4 Dead 2 specials so changes things up a bunch. And you can't see your own body, and that makes a big difference too.
Kieran, what are your thoughts on Left 4 Dead 2?
I never played it before we were doing this, which I know is ridiculous, given how long that it's been out. I haven't played the first one either, and I probably never will. I really enjoyed that it is a co-op game. I really like co-op games. I mean, as we were discussing earlier before the show, the amount of multiplayer games that seem to think that a deathmatch mode constitutes multiplayer, and that's good enough. You know, that's not really what it's about. You know, you want to actually play the proper game, not run around a map that's missing all of its entities with some other people and force some other game mode on them. So I really did enjoy the co-op aspect to it. One of the things that bothered me about it, I should say the only thing that really bothered me about it, you know, when you're picking up a med pack or a pipe bomb or a goo bomb or whatever the hell they're called, any of those, the way you can only carry, I mean, for the med pack maybe okay, but for the pipe bombs and for your goo bombs, you know, why can you only have one of them? I have two pockets, and this is a zombie apocalypse. I'm sorry, and if you don't have a backpack,
one pocket's
in a zombie
apocalypse.
But he puts it on his back, doesn't he? The med pack. Why wouldn't you have a bag? If you're in a zombie apocalypse and you don't have a bag, you deserve to be eaten by zombies, and you deserve to die of starvation or whatever it is that gets you.
From a scene perspective, like, it's probably important that you can only carry one, because otherwise you're the ratio of damage that you can deal over, you know, a certain amount of time has changed dramatically if you carry a pipe bomb and a Molotov at the same time. And it encourages you to, you know, you would work with yourself rather than working with your allies to coordinate your combinatorial use of the pickups there.
True. The balance would be important, but I would have much preferred if they were slightly less effective each time and you could carry a couple of them. I mean, I guess I'm really embittered about this because I, as you know, was playing with the Steam controller and still sort of getting used to an FPS environment with the Steam controller. Because you really got to find the sweet spot for yourself to get everything flowing how it's supposed to be. So it's really easy to make a mistake when you throw something like that. I mean, when we were playing through, you know, there was at least two occasions where I exploded a pipe bomb right in the middle of us instead of throwing it out towards the zombies, you know. And then it's wasted and you're like, no, I carried this through half the level .
And Kieran, next time, don't shoot the gasoline.
That was me. No, I didn't shoot the gasoline. I shot the gas canister. Propane tank, yeah. dear.
For those that are wondering, yes, we died, and quite frequently.
Yeah, I kind of felt, looking back, I felt like I was probably pushing you guys a bit harder than you were ready for. Like, I've got about 100 hours in Left 4 Dead 2, and probably a couple hundred in Left 4 Dead 1, I guess. And I kinda, it never really kind of occurred to me that I would be on the other side of the skill divide. Like, when I play with randoms online, if they're way more skilled than I am, then I just kind of feel useless and ineffective, and kind of have never really sort of been on the other side of that thing where playing with newer players who hadn't played before. Running in to grab the bottles, I probably should have gotten one of you guys to grab the bottles. I was like, I can grab it, I can do it really fast, you guys can cover me. Yeah, I don't think we were sort of working as a team effectively enough for that sort of strategy to work so well.
I think it all went okay, apart from when we got to the little mini mart to get the Coke. That was
That's
we should
never
have split up there.
So normally when we play, sometimes my girlfriend and I'll do that on the same difficulty. We'll kill the AI at the beginning and then we'll just play as two people. We can run through that part without too much trouble. Normally what would happen is you have two guys to cover from above, and then two guys to go in and grab the bottle and run out. And the person who's got the bottles can't shoot, so you've got to like shoot the zombies around them so that they can keep running, because every time a zombie hits you, it slows you down. But they don't hit you very frequently, so keeping them at base quite easy. It's like if you focus on just shooting all the zombies, that doesn't allow you to sort of continue, and you can't give the guy the bottles unless you can stand still without being hit for like 15 seconds or something. So you kind of need everybody to be covering each other and very coordinated for that part, regardless of how it goes down. But yeah, you're right. We probably should have stuck together and tried to, you know, stay as a group and work through it that way.
I found it easier to do that bit. I was playing it with someone else in 2AI, but going in as one group, while it is still a nightmare a bit to get through, I found it easier with the group all together. Each time we split up, and I should say I was being one of the guys trying to provide cover with Matt, I think it was, wasn't it? And the zombies, they pour over all the roofs and all the surfaces like a waterfall, and then people are screaming, oh, cover me, and you're like, oh, I can't, I've got like 8 zombies on me. I can't even see where I am.
Do you guys know that you can right-click and you can knock them back a fair way?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I did not.
Right-click is the meat of the attack.
We should have stopped at the beginning and gone over like some of the controls and stuff a bit more as well. But yeah, you can do that, and that's a really effective way of kind of like getting that breathing space, because they all stumble around for a little bit and you can shoot them all pretty easy.
Did you say, am I remembering this right, did you also say that if you crouch, then you won't shoot your teammates like arbitrarily?
No, the crosshair gives an indication of your accuracy, so when you're shooting, the crosshair spreads to cover a wider radius to give you an idea of what your accuracy is like. If you crouch, that crosshair comes in a bit further, and so you get sort of increased accuracy when you're crouching.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Well, what I was the one that said if you crouch, you don't get hit by your teammates. What I was meant by that is when you're in the doorways, you don't get shot in the back.
That makes more sense.
Yeah, get the person in front of the crowd.
Yeah. You know, that whole hey, don't shoot your teammates thing that they still love to tell you consistently.
I think we also had a bit of a handicap with regards to ping, because I had like 300, I think, because I'm way over here in Australia land, and yeah, other guys in Europe, so he's probably got fairly slow ping as well.
Mine was okay, I think. I don't know. Well, no, because I don't think... Was I hosting? Is that the way it works? Because I'm sure that if I drop out, then someone else becomes the host, that the game remains active. So I'm not sure, is that running on one of Valve's servers? I mean, is it actually running on...
No, I think we were running like a locally hosted game, but it's able to shift that dynamically as you play.
Fair enough. Oh, well, that might have been why. Next time I probably shouldn't host then, because I am in the arse end of nowhere. The internet here is terrible. It's shockingly bad.
It's all good. But did you guys have fun? Like, did you enjoy playing the game?
I always have fun playing Left 4 Dead. It's a great co-op game, and I think that it almost gives you the vibe of having the legit local co-op in a game, or just over the net, if you have the right group of people to play it with.
And if you have voice chat, that's probably something we should touch on, is that the Linux version doesn't have working voice chat at the moment.
No, it doesn't.
Which is horrendous. When it first launched, it didn't have it, and it was fixed for a little while, and it seems to have gone away again. I use Mumble whenever I'm playing with people, and I play with my girlfriend, and she sits next to me, so we do have that kind of local co-op experience. But yeah, I hadn't noticed that it was still busted in.
Because we tried it, and for about 20 minutes at least, trying to get it to work, it did not want to work.
Yeah, that sucks. And also, it looks like there was an update in October or November, I think it was, which has meant that you can't Alt-Tab or have the window lose focus, yes. Otherwise it'll crash.
It will still be present, the process will still be running, but apparently X11 does not want to bring it back into focus at all and make it work.
I know, it hangs as well, like it stops rendering.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it...
And I think the audio stops too.
Yes, it does, because as soon as the window lost focus, like the game, like the process is still running, but it's not rendering anything. It's like,
it
really hangs. Weird. Because I know you had a few issues with that when you first started. You're like, what the hell? I'm like, stop alt tabbing.
I run everything windowed. I work while I play while I work, and I just can't. It's unconscious now. I switch between applications while loading screens are happening, and check my mail and respond to chat and do lots of things, and I just could not stop switching away from the game.
Well, see, and that was my problem. Like, because I have all my dual monitor set up, and it was just like,
right.
You'd alt tab to it and be like, so you do the integrity check on it to make sure you're not missing anything or something, and it's like, that came back with nothing. Okay, awesome. I just wasted X amount of time doing something I obviously did not need to do.
I'm going to have to check out some of the other Source Engine games and see if I still have that problem.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll have to check out...
The games had that problem.
So I'll have to check out Counter-Strike, and I'll have to check out TF2 to see if that's a thing with that, too. Because, yeah. I know it's not an issue in any of the current Unity-based games that I'm playing. I say current, so I leave that open for interpretation. Do not quote me as that. because right now I'm playing Pillars, and that has no issues with alt-tabbing out.
It's a Unity game?
Yeah.
Along the lines of voice chat on games, I never actually tried it until we were playing Left 4 Dead 2, because I was playing it on my Steam machine with Steam OS. Because I've never used the voice chat features on it before, I've never noticed that they don't... If it's not built into the game, it doesn't work in the game, you're basically not going to have it. Things like Mumble or TeamSpeak or Ventrilo or whatever it is you want to use, you can't use on SteamOS at the moment, at least. Like, there's no way to leave something running in the background, because SteamOS will always make sure everything's closed before you drop back to the library interface. So... You've basically got no way in SteamOS at the moment to actually be able to talk to other players if the Steam service isn't working with the game itself. I mean, because I'm not actually too sure about the Steam chat system, but does the game itself have to support it, or can you use the Steam overlay and go around that and set up your own?
I thought the game had to support it, but I don't use it, so I wouldn't really know. I think some people have had some success with getting Mumble running with SteamOS.
I know there are some budgets for it. None of them look particularly ideal. That's going to be a case of, I want to talk to people in this game, so I'm going to have to drop to desktop mode and fiddle with config files and set this going and then go back to Steam and launch the game and undo all of that when you come out of it again. Otherwise, it'll just keep trying to connect to things like Mumble or TeamSpeak or whatever in the background, no matter what it is you're doing, which could get annoying. I don't know. Because I'm not overly familiar at all with it.
That's why stuff like SteamOS isn't interesting to me. I don't know. I mean, because you can get rid of big picture mode and you can run it as a desktop if you want. But so I figure if you're doing that, then just use a desktop operating system.
Pretty much.
Why would you want to run? I think it's what GNOME 3.4 or whatever it's.
I think it uses it is an older version of GNOME 3. It's not like a great version. And with some things, there's problems with the font scaling as well. Specifically, the Trine launchers, actually. I tried the Shadwin demo the other day, and it's still got the same problem in it on SteamOS, where it scales the launcher to fill the screen, but the text isn't the size it's supposed to be. So you just get... you get all these options and you can't see what any of them are, so you just end up clicking things blindly and then clicking launch button and hoping for the best. And it's not oh god, and above and beyond that as well, if you've got your Steam controller in gamepad mode, then even to click blindly and get the game to launch, you have to change the gamepad mode to, you know, keyboard and mouse mode, so you can click all these weird things and then change it back to game. It's just a pain. It really is. It's
like, I was going to say, speaking of Frostbite games, I just got Trine 3. Dual monitors, it is a giant pain in the...
We're out of windowed.
I know, that's the only way.
I thought it had a borderless full screen option as well.
It does, but it, for some reason, it does not play nice with my dual monitors at all.
Yeah, right.
Because I end up, you launch the game and it ends up in the middle of both my monitors. So I have this big chunk of the game where I'm like, I can't see a damn thing.
And yeah, you know, I ran it windowed and didn't have any problems, but yeah, if they're not picking the right screen coordinates to launch a borderless full screen window on, then that's not good.
Yeah, so, and that's after screwing around with it in the actual launcher, you know, that you do get that I can mess around with. I'm like, no, go to my 16x10 monitor, thank you. And it doesn't want to work. But anyway.
So one thing that Left 4 Dead 2 has, or and Left 4 Dead 1, I guess, the big thing that they have that kind of sets them apart from other similar games that were around at the time is the thing that Valve made a big fuss about was the AI director. And the idea is that this, like taking information from or taking analysis from sort of horror films and zombie films and this sort of stuff, it worked out the kind of pacing and the kind of beats involved with those sorts of films and tried to recreate that so that the game's got this AI component that decides when it's a good time to throw a horde at you, but also when it's a good time to give you some downtime and that you feel like you're just walking around this mysteriously empty place. Did you guys kind of get a sense that the game was intelligently choosing when to throw zombies at us and when to give us quiet moments?
I didn't get an overly powerful sense of that. Maybe at points. I mean, it was painfully obvious that the zombies were going to keep coming forever at many points when we were playing it. You know, and I don't remember any of this downtime of which you speak, apart from in the safe rooms and the seconds you get. I mean, if you just stood out in the world, then I suppose you get maybe a minute to, you know, after you've killed everything, to sort of sort yourselves out and look around and whatnot. But after that minute, then it all starts up again, and it'll just, you know, I get the impression it'll just keep doing that forever.
Some of those are location-based, and some of it's about how long people stand still for, some of it's about how much health people have, some of it's about how far away, like how spread out everyone is. So, like, all of these kind of factors influence how and when the AI decides to spawn just a zombie horde, or whether it decides to spawn one of the specials.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. It's not something that I think is, like, immediately obvious on the surface, but I think it adds a huge amount of atmosphere to the game.
I have about 20 hours into Left 4 Dead 2, and if you the more hours that you get into it, I think the more you'll notice the nuances like that.
Definitely.
I know it's not something that would be brutally upfront for, like, in Karen's case, it's not something he really noticed, but if you actually play it enough, you'll notice that the spawn points and all the other stuff, like, there are certain things that are location-based, and there are other times where you're like, I don't remember that ever happening here. So, you know, there are times where you get, like, zombies, and you're like, where the hell did all those come from?
So that's the other nice thing about it, is that it means that it's not quite so repetitive. You know, when you're playing through the same maps all the time, you do kind of feel like you're having a different experience.
Yes. Now, granted, you could say there are points in the game where it does feel repetitive, but, I mean, then again, that's with pretty much any game where you're shooting people in the face, or, in this case, zombies.
Right.
I know, like, for myself, I can only really play for about an hour before I kind of need to be like, all right, I'm good for a while.
I used to be able to play it all day, but I injured my hands at one point, and I can't play it for more than about 40 minutes at a time. It's like, I don't know why it's Left 4 Dead 2 or Left 4 Dead specifically, but it's just either there's a lot more attention, going on, or a lot more clicking going on, but it just kills my hands real fast.
The director stuff is something you'll definitely notice the more you play it, I think, Karen.
I'll have to play some more of it and see. I mean, I will definitely play some more of it. It is an enjoyable game. I did like it. The few moments in it that you just think, you know, you game, like, why would you do that to me? I remember one point in the mall bit in the first campaign where you step through a door frame into a store and the alarm goes off and you just think, oh, Jesus. Like, if this were the real world now in this situation, I would just put this gun straight to my temple and be done with the whole thing. I'm not going to the third floor.
have you like finished the first campaign before?
No, not quite yet. No, I came really close, okay. But I haven't had much chance to finish it off this week because I've had like loads of other stuff to be doing. So, like, but it will happen. Like, I will go through the rest of it because I hear the story gets much more interesting and you meet up with the crew from the first one, even though I haven't played that. And I'm curious to see where
that was added as part of like a DLC type thing that they added to the game a while back. So the base game didn't have any of the original people in it.
Oh, really? I thought that it was part of the main storyline.
No. I'm trying to remember what it was called. The Sacrifice is where like the characters that from Left 4 Dead 2 talk to the characters from Left 4 Dead 1, but I think they also added like Crash Course at the same time where you play as the Left 4 Dead 1 people, but maybe Crash Course was also a DLC for Left 4 Dead 1. I don't know, it all gets a bit confused.
I get a little confused with all the DLCs now that come out for games or did come out. I mean, we are talking about a game that came out in 2009 originally.
Yeah, it is I don't know. I don't want to say it's like old, but it's been around.
Okay, when you can play on Intel integrated graphics.
There are games in development today that come out on Intel dedicated graphics.
True, but my point is when it's supposed to be a AAA game. Left 4 Dead is a AAA game, but you know what I mean.
At the end of the first campaign, like at the end of each campaign, there's usually like a crescendo event. Where you get a big tank, which is like the highest, toughest enemy that there is and has the ability to pick up people and throw them around and stuff. But also there'll be some kind of objective, and in the first campaign, Dead Center, the objective is to put fuel in this showcase, this drag car that's in the middle of the mall as part of a, like a showcase thing, and you put fuel in it and then you drive it out. So you gotta like fill it up fuel while there's this tank and many zombies coming at you and stuff. Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting to kind of think about that from a pacing perspective, the way that the crescendos work within the context of the game as a whole. Do you sort of have any experiences there that you think are exciting or interesting?
The crescendo stuff is interesting. I think the mall with the race car.
That bit sounds like a horrible bit. I haven't actually played quite that far ahead yet. I confess I have read ahead to the start of the next campaign, where apparently you meet up with the old crew at a drawbridge and you have to go and get some gasoline or something. That's like as far as I read ahead, though, just so you know I knew how the first campaign at least ended.
I was going to say, cheese, you know what I'm talking about there, right?
Yeah, I kind of love it. I think it's fantastic because it does force you to deal with a lot of different things at the same time. You've got to deal with scavenging the fuel, you've got to deal with the zombies, and you've got to deal with actually putting fuel in the car. And the fuel you can use that you pick up, like it spawns at random points around this multi-story open space in the mall. So you go, you know, go up the escalators and track down where the stuff is. But you can also use the fuel as like an offensive thing. So you can throw it down, you can shoot it, and it'll leave flames and take care of the zombies for you. So you've got this trade-off of like, do I use the fuel to fill up the car, or do I use it to take out the zombies that are giving me a hard time? If you do use it to go against the zombies, then that's one more canister of fuel that you've got to find to put in the car. And it's a lovely balance of risk versus reward that you've got to play with there. I think it's fantastic.
I'm really wary of using the gasoline as a weapon in that game, because all the zombie apocalypse survival guides say, look, if you set fire to zombies that are still moving, they're not going to die. You've then just got zombies that are on fire and running at you. which is true in Left 4 Dead 2, because they do still run at you.
And yes, then they do.
They don't attack you if they're on fire.
But they run at you. Just run
around. I was going to say, but no, you become on fire if they get near you.
they just kind of writhe and stumble around. They don't hurt you once they're on fire. Not the little ones, anyway.
I didn't get the impression that they were staggering around so much. Maybe I wasn't looking closely enough, I don't know. But it looked to me like they would just run straight through the fire, they'd burst into flames, and then they'd run straight at you, and then you'd be on fire, and... fire bad when fighting zombies.
Fire's particularly useful when taking on the tank, because you set the tank on fire, and then it takes damage over time.
But everyone's favorite thing is the jockey.
So Left 4 Dead 2 has a versus mode as well, where one team plays as the special infected, and one team plays as the survivors. And being able to play as the jockey is a lot of fun as well.
I could see that being fun. I haven't tried that mode. I've only tried the normal campaign mode. I might have to give that a go.
It's a really interesting attempt to have like a asymmetric multiplayer, and on a lot of levels it works really well. But I feel like the skill divide is really hard to get into a game where you feel like you're making a difference, because like the way that Left 4 Dead is modeled is that the survivors live for a long time and the zombies die very fast, but there's lots of them. And so when you play as a special infected, you're dying a lot, and it's all about making sure that every death counts, making sure that you get a little bit of damage off them every time that you die. And I think for players who aren't familiar with the mechanics of the special infected when they're playing, that it's very easy to be ineffective and feel like you're not doing anything useful. So you kind of have to have a lot of experience before you can play as the infected, I think. But the game shuffles it around when you're playing multiplayer, so you don't really have a choice. I feel like it's hard to have an enjoyable match. If you're playing as not very skilled survivors, you've got a better chance of just going because it's got sort of default style first-person controls, you know how everything works. If you've got a really skilled team of special infected, they will pin you down and you will not go anywhere. You'll leave the safe room and die. and the other way around, if you've got a low-skill special infected and a low or a medium skilled team of survivors, the survivors will walk right to the other end and they'll be fine. If you have a high skilled team of survivors and a medium skilled team of specially infected, if they know what they're doing and they're coordinating well, the specially infected will be able to keep the survivors pinned down. Like it's once you know how the mechanics work, it can be really effective. But if you don't get it, if you haven't got it yet, then it's not going to be fun.
Yeah, I was going to say, it all depends on the group of people that you get or have. Mm.
So you know how the boomer, for example, a big fat guy, he takes a couple of bullets and then explodes. So that means that when you play as him, you've got to be like really stealthy and you've got to get up really close to make it so that when you explode, if you explode, that you you actually hit one of them with your bile. That's like those canisters that you throw and it attracts the zombies to that point. So if you can, the goal is to throw up on the survivors and then run away. But if you can't, you can just run up to them and they'll shoot you and you explode and you get them covered in goo. But yeah, if you're not experienced with how to guide that guy, he's super fragile and you generally won't be able to get close enough to do anything useful.
Then you have the annoying ones like the lickers, and then you have
the tongue guy's not too bad.
You.
We call him a science guy, but I think in the game he's called a charger. They run at you and then smack you into the ground.
Nice guys.
Yeah, charger and hunter, hunters or
the hunter also jumps on you and just like rips yes through you. So the original game had a hunter, boomer. You had the boomer, the hunter, tongue guy, and the tank, and that was it. So the hunter, the boomer is about spewing on you and getting the other, like just normal zombies to attack you. The hunter jumps on you and pins you down, so that if anybody gets separated from the group, then if the hunter jumps on them and pins them down, then you know they die really fast. So the hunter's about encouraging the survivors to stay together. And again, that melee attack, if you right-click, that'll knock the hunter off anybody that he's got pinned down. And the tongue guy is about pulling people away from the group or pulling people out of the group. And so he's kind of, he's sort of the sniper type arrangement, but he's also about kind of picking up the team. And then the tank is just this big, tough thing that, that can knock cars around and throw rocks and smash people to buggery.
Throw them halfway across the screen. And
yeah. And then Left 4 Dead 2 brought in the charger, which we saw before. You know, he like runs from a distance, knocks someone away from the group. If you angle it right, you can go forever. You can run them off a ledge or whatever, which is super cool if you nail that. The jockey jumps on you, and it's like mixes the survivor player movement with the jockey player movement. So if you're trying to go left, if the jockey's not doing anything, you will go left. But if the jockey's doing something, he's got like 60% more control over where you're going, so he can like steer you right. And the idea is that you kind of like use him in conjunction with the boomer or the spitter to like, or if there's fire somewhere, you like put him in the fire or walk him off a cliff. Like the idea is to like walk them into places where they're not not useful or where they can take a lot of damage. And then the spitter is this kind of like area denial thing where you, you spit the acid that does a lot of damage over time, but you know, it's pretty easy to hop out of if your enemy's on you and stuff. But you know, again, using the hunter on the spitter goo, you know, that it makes a big difference, kind of thing. Oh, and the witch was in the original one as well, but generally she's pretty easy to avoid.
Yep, if you hear the crying.
Yeah, yeah. So I think when you play versus, nobody gets to play as the witch, which is probably for the best because you'd be pretty bored if you're like just sitting there waiting and everybody avoids you.
Yeah, press space to stop.
Yeah,
I didn't know that's how the jockey move mechanics work though. That makes much more sense to me now. Because every time one jumped on me, it's just like, oh, I moved to stay alive. Like it's moving by itself. What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to control this? I didn't get it.
It's really cool. And yeah, like the hunter, if somebody does the melee attack, it knocks him off. But yeah, they're all like compared to the survivor. They're all really weak except for the tank. Like they can't take much damage. So you got to be like really thoughtful about how you use them and how you approach doing damage with them. Which makes for like a really interesting experience if you're playing at that level and you've got those skills. But if you don't, then yeah, it can feel a bit crushing.
That's what we've mentioned some of the problems with it. We've mentioned what we've liked about it. What would you guys say as your final kind of, I don't want to say verdict, but your overall feel for the game?
I think it does a really good job of recapturing like a lot of that kind of, you know, zombie film aesthetic and pacing and atmosphere. It's pretty fantastic at doing that.
I think it's a fun game. Strangely enough, it reminds me a lot of games that I used to play in the arcade with a light gun, like House of the Dead. Huh. Like that in that sort of because the levels are so linear, if that makes sense. You know, you've got a definitive start point, a definitive end point, and there's very little wiggle room in between while you make your way through the hordes. And I think it would be a brilliant game if you could play it with a light gun. That would be awesome. Or similar device. Light guns are pretty
like
old.
Like a rail shooter version, or do you mean like a VR version with a gun that you can aim independently of looking?
Today, I would probably say VR version with a gun that you can aim. Not necessarily VR, though. I mean, it'd still work on a screen. I mean, of course, the difficulty is getting the movement controls down. Because I don't like... On-the-rail stuff is... That's really boring. I hate on-the-rail stuff. It's not on-the-rail stuff. I was thinking about this the other day, and I keep meaning to look into configuring the Steam controller to work with a keyboard along these lines, because I think you might be able to affect something like that with a Steam controller. I saw I assume you guys have seen the trailer for the Steam controller, you know, came out a while ago, and one of the things they did show is that you can use the gyro and hold the controller on its side like a gun and use the back paddles as the triggers or whatever the hell it is you want to configure it as, if that's what you want to do. So I might actually give that a go and mix it up with the keyboard and see how well that works, because that could be really fun. But in terms of zombie survival games, I guess what I would look more for from a zombie survival game is an open world survival, you know, if that makes sense. Something closer to Project Zomboid.
7 Days to Die or something?
Dead Island. 7 Days to Die, maybe, yeah. I only seen a little bit of that here. It's a bit unstable on Linux. I don't know if that's true or not, though, so I'm not putting that out there as fact.
They did a big update recently, and I think I heard some guys talking about that being a little bit improved.
I have to give that a go, then. It's one of the ones... It is on my wish list, actually, I think, if I recall, but... I haven't done much with it because I just keep seeing posts popping up saying, oh, it's broken again now that it's been updated, and you know, you can't play it until they fix it. And I'm not really too interested with games that are sort of at that stage at the moment. You know, like it will annoy me if I want to play something and I can't play it because it's updated and it's broken because of something they've done to it. I have similar feelings about Dying Light. Dying Light looks really, really good. I'd really like to play it, but I don't trust it not to be broken during the brief windows of my life where I'm not working and I have chance to play something.
God, hope that an update doesn't break it. I will.
I think if Left 4 Dead 2, or I think if the Left 4 Dead games had some more, I mean, some of them have like kind of non-linear paths where you can choose where you can go, but there's not a lot of that. You like typically it comes back to the same choke points and the same end goals and stuff. I think if it was a bit more open and a bit more kind of sandboxy, that it would be a very different type of game.
It would be completely different, and it would have different hurdles that it would have to get over to keep the gameplay enjoyable at that point, I think. But there's a lot of stuff they'd have to add in to make that work, but that would be closer to the kind of thing that I'd imagine. You know, if we're going to do zombie survival, then I would like to see something more all out. You know, you have to keep yourself fed, you have to keep yourself sheltered, you've got to keep the power on, and you know all the other things that would go along with trying to survive in that situation and trying to call for help to other survivors and such. I mean, I'm not putting Left 4 Dead 2 down in any capacity, like stacking it up against other things. It is a really fun game, it's a fun shooter, but it doesn't contain a lot of the stuff that I was expecting it to have when, considering I never played it before anyway, you know, before this. When I came to it, I was expecting that it was going to have more going on in it than it seems to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of geared more towards what you would see in a like a John Romero film, rather than like an actual survival experience. It's like this very short story of some escape or you know, people striving towards getting towards a goal kind of thing. Rather than this kind of experience of living in a zombie apocalypse type situation.
Yeah, well, it does that well, but there must be some middle ground between, you know, that approach, what they've got, and something a bit more open, where you could have, you know, better elements of both, but not quite everything, if that makes more sense. Just a little more diversity is, you know, what you can do in the game, rather than a set of linear campaigns, because as Matt said, how you can only play it for an hour or so before that's enough for a while. You know, that's the same kind of thing I experience personally with things that have such a linear progression like that. I get bored after about an hour, and if I'm going to sit and play a game, it's probably going to be what I'm going to do for the entirety of the day, and I gravitate towards stuff that, you know, I'll blink my eye, 6 hours will have passed, and I won't have...
I think you can finish a campaign in under an hour quite comfortably, usually.
Yeah,
that sounds right.
I think it's made for that kind of like play for an hour and then do something else kind of thing. Like it feels like that's what they're intending.
Probably. I'm guessing it would take me about an hour and a half to do one campaign from start to finish. An hour and a half to 2 hours, depending on how much I cock it up, which is likely. Especially towards the end of each of them.
So, and for me, like I said, I like the co-op. It gives me that feel of the local co-op feel if you have the right group of people and the right software. You know, Mumble or Hangouts or, you know, whatever you want to use to actually talk.
Yeah, I feel like it's a game where voice chat's essential. If you don't have that it's a lot more work. And there are some in-game kind of communication things that we didn't use, but they're no substitute for just going, hey, you know, you do this, I'll do this, and working it out.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So, hey, Valve, fix the voice chat built in.
Please.
Please? Please? It's already been reported, I do believe, if I remember seeing the bug on it. Right along with the window focus, that would be great too.
yeah, that's the big one for me. That one I've seen a bug for. I haven't noticed whether or not there's one for voice stuff though. So I played both Left 4 Dead 1 and Left 4 Dead 2 long before Steam had Linux support. So that's where most of my experience with the game comes from, running it in Wine.
But yeah, I was gonna say, I don't think I would play Left 4 Dead as just like by myself per se. It's a group game kind of thing. So like it's a game I would play with friends, but not a game I would just plop down and spend an hour playing myself or whatever. It's just something I don't feel. I'm not that kind of gamer when it comes to these type of games, the Horde, because really it's a Horde mode with a story.
I was just gonna say I don't think I've ever played it on my own. I didn't really. Yeah, there's not much to get out of it playing on your own, I don't think.
Yeah, I did for a bit, and I have to say, to be fair, that the AI teammates are still irritating at times, but they are nowhere near as bad as the AI teammates that you get in a lot of other games. You know, the kind where you just think, I can't do this is unworkable, they're way too stupid, like, there's no way that I can function with these things. But it does do okay as a single player. I've seen way, way worse. I got further than we got. By myself with the three AI teammates. I mean, I was largely using them as a human shield, but you know,
I thought that was the whole point.
that is one thing. It's like an AI. If you've got teammates who aren't so experienced, having one AI kicking around can help fill a little bit of that gap. The AI is pretty good, I guess.
Yeah, but like you said, for me, it's just not something I would play by myself. Co-op, great game. I love it. You know, I can do it in hour bursts, but it's not a game I can sit here and play for 3, 4, 5 hours anymore. I can only shoot zombies so many times in the face, no matter how they try to change it up, even with great things like the director and stuff. How do you guys feel has the game aged since it's been out, though?
I don't know. I didn't think it has.
I don't think it's aged particularly either, to be honest. I mean, it's not the best example. The only thing you really notice that in it slightly is the graphics, perhaps. But other than that, you know, the game's still really good today. Just as good today as it, you know, was when it came out, I think. Looking at it from the quality of it.
Yes, and that is the thing. For those that are curious, I don't know about you guys. For me, gameplay always trumps pretty graphics.
Yes.
I think Left 4 Dead aesthetically is still quite pleasing. I don't feel like the graphics themselves really have any issues for me anyway.
It is okay. Having to have played this on Intel integrated graphics today, I would say it is aesthetically fine if you are able to use all the graphic options that are presented in the game.
Do you guys play with film grain on, or do you play with it off?
Honestly,
I don't know.
Honestly, I just booted into it for a half an hour to do a quick round to get a refresher, see if there was any more critiques I needed. And
we usually play with film grain off. I can't stand it. And motion blur as well. I can't remember if Left 4 Dead 2 has motion blur by default, but that can get in the sea.
But for me, the gameplay for Left 4 Dead 2 is very good. The guns feel weighty. The sound design's good. You know, all that stuff. And if you put on a pair of headphones, like hearing the witch kind of off in the distance crying, you know, that kind of ambiance, that stuff's really cool. There's a lot of stuff that is really well done in it, you know, in my take on it. The overall consensus is if you have the right group of people, this is a great game to play.
Yeah. I mean, even playing with randoms is not terrible. Sometimes I feel like if you get up to a certain skill level, like if you're playing and you don't know what you're doing, then playing with people who also don't know what they're doing, I don't feel like you learn much. Like, that's not so enjoyable. But if you're a little bit higher and you kind of, like, can show some people the ropes and then have an exciting experience that's a bit harder than what you would usually have because you don't have the support of highly experienced players, then that's a lot of fun too.
The game did go way faster with playing with real people. I mean, my God, like a single player is all right, but you know, like it will take you three times as long. You are doing everything.
Well, like I said, I also did push us a bit harder than we probably should, so I think we were probably, if I hadn't been doing that, we probably would have gone through it a bit slower anyway.
Maybe. I think we did perfectly fine up until the Coke bit. Like, everything was gravy up until that point.
Yeah. It was funny, though. Like, I could get the bottles up to the door, but you guys were kind of dead by the time I got there, and I couldn't put it in on my own.
I know, because I was the one guarding the door, so you could try to get to it. And I'm like, shooting all... I'm like, I'm getting hit by all the zombies. I'm dead already.
Yeah, no, I should have stayed back and covered you guys as you guys grabbed the bottles and
it's all good. It was fun time.
It was my bad.
We'll do better next time. And speaking of next time, I was just having a quick look, jumping back to the voice chat stuff that we were talking about earlier. So apparently there is a button that I've never seen before, but apparently exists in the Steam chat where you can just start a group voice chat outside of a game.
Yeah, there is. Sorry.
Okay, so correction. The one that's in the game that says start voice chat does not work. It did not try the function in the voice chat.
If you're using the voice chat that's part of the like the Steam client normal chat stuff, I don't see how that's any different from using Mumble. Like, you're still using something that's outside the game.
Yes.
True, but
if you don't have the ability to install Mumble, then that's obviously a different story, but...
It is. This is, I guess, more applicable to SteamOS because it'll work on there. So
yeah.
Well,
yeah,
sure. So the criticism about the voice chat not working is the one that's integrated into the game. We will make that. With that said, let's get into the news that we have. So Tomb Raider officially coming out. System requirements have been revealed. What do you guys think about A, Tomb Raider coming out finally for Linux, and B, this is the 2013 version for those that are wondering. And
is that the one where they call it Laura instead of Laura or something stupid?
Yes.
No, they call it Laura instead of Lara, and some people call it Laura or something. It's just mad. Get it right, guys. How many years has it been?
95.
I don't have any care or attention for that franchise.
I haven't played all of them. I've nowhere near all of them. There's so many of them. I played a couple of them, obviously, when I was a kid, and I played a bit of the 2013 one on Xbox a while ago. Not much of it, though, like maybe 20 minutes. But I'll actually play through it properly now that it's coming to Linux. I'm really excited for it, and I am very, very pleased now that the specs have been released to see that my little Steam box just about scrapes by yet again. So I can hold off upgrading it for another couple of months still.
The biggest thing that I've seen is, at least in the comment on the site, have been about the system recommended requirements of being a, I believe it's 3 gig video card.
Yeah.
And Linux drivers have gotten a shit ton better compared to what they were before Steam launched, but there are still things that can be improved. There are things on our platform that are 100% perfect. So the complaint that the Windows version requires less spec on recommended system requirements and Linux requires more, I see that as kind of, some of that's the drivers. Some of that can be optimization or how the game's built, for Christ's sakes. It could be 50,000 different reasons why there is a higher requirement.
Yeah. We sort of touched on this in a previous episode as well. It's like there are so many moving parts that it could be anything. But like you say, like graphics drivers do feel like they're likely to be the thing. Looking at the system requirements on the Steam store page, they don't make mention. In fact, I think they're actually lower. I am just... looking at it now. No, have I gone to a different page? No, sorry, it hadn't finished loading. I was looking at something else. Never mind. Ignore me. There are no Linux requirements on Steam at the moment.
No, these are the ones Feral released.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was looking at another game that did support Linux and it hadn't finished loading Tomb Raider yet.
Gotcha.
I was like, holy shit, this is way low. What is up here? It's like 460. Like, it runs on GTX 460. What's going on there? That's mad. That's crazy.
Well, I actually, the original, when I had the Tomb Raider from 2013 on Windows, it ran on a 460 perfectly fine. It was a that was a 2 gig 460.
They say that it'll run on 8600 on Windows on the Steam store page. Yeah, that's a big difference. Huge difference.
That is huge, because if you look at what our requirements are, it's a, I think it's a minimum 460, isn't it?
Yeah, minimum 640, sorry.
Yeah. Which, okay, for those that are wondering, a 640 is not...
That's generations above.
I was going to say, that's generations A above, and B, a 640 is entry level on NVIDIA cards. I will give Feral props for finally supporting an AMD chipset,
though. Yeah, look, I think that they would have had AMD support for XCOM 2 out of the box if they had been able to work to their own time frames instead of 2K's release schedule for the game.
Yeah, I was going to say, because they were trying to do simultaneous release. But I'm glad to see that they're, you know, that AMD users are getting some love. Now, granted, if you're going to run on the newer Ubuntu versions, you might want to hold off on it.
Oh, I don't know. Specs here say that the driver for the AMD-supported one is Mesa. So,
okay.
Ubuntu's using Mesa, isn't it? It's not talking about Radeon software. I think no one cares about that anymore. Like, it's too broken. You can't support that.
No, I will give AMD credit. AMD, thank you for supporting with drivers nonetheless, even though they have their issues. NVIDIA has its own issues as well. I am looking at you, suspend and resume.
I think these requirements that they put out as well, for even though it's consuming more resources, like as you say, for any number of reasons, it's probably fair to comment that this is, I imagine, a wide window that they've put out there to say you'll need to fall within this range at least for it to function properly. These specs are likely to change at a thought as time rolls on.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, I sit here, I'm looking at the specs, and it's like NVIDIA 640. That's not exactly high end. You know, that's their entry level laptop video card usually for most NVIDIA laptops from, okay, what, three generations ago now. So you're talking something that came out 2012. So I mean, it's not unreasonable to ask for that as a minimum. Considering this game would be 2013.
Neither is the processor or the amount of RAM that it asks for. It's what I would think is a just slightly below average amount, to be honest, now, for your typical rig you would want to play games on these days.
Well, it's like my gaming rig would fall just above the recommended requirements. My video card is the minimum recommended, but I also have 4 gigs of RAM on my video card.
But, I think mine falls just above the minimum, so when it comes out, it could be interesting to see like your experiences running it versus mine.
Find out. I'll have to do some benchmarks and stuff, see what I get in comparison. I think it's good that it's coming out. I look forward to playing it. I did sink a good chunk of hours into it when it came out for Windows, so I look forward to playing a game that I thoroughly enjoyed on Linux.
Definitely. The bits I played of it on Xbox ages ago reminded me of Uncharted in a lot of ways, like more so than a Tomb Raider game, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, they were not shy. They specifically said that that's where they got a lot of their inspiration from.
Oh, did they?
Yes.
Oh, well, that makes sense. RuneScape NXT client, which is now available for Linux users, sort of. There are problems with it being an insecure PPA. There are problems that it's only available officially to Debian-based distributions at the moment. They only ship in a Deb format. It is available in the Arch user repository as well. If you're Red Hat-based, you're screwed at the moment. Apparently, the NXT launcher on Arch-based distros is hit and miss. Some people say it's perfectly fine, and other people say they've had problems with it. I'm not too sure what's going on there. But I thought it was worth a mention, because it would be, I suppose, one of the first well-known MMOs on Linux.
So So on that note, for those of us who've never heard of it before, what is it?
Well.
Oh, God. No. Okay, Kieran, short version.
Right, short. Okay. I struggle to imagine a world where no one's heard of RuneScape. So it started out as an MMO that was a browser-based game written in Java, and you can still access that client now. You can now use the NXT client, which is a complete engine rewrite and has some more, I say modern features. They're not modern features. They're ancient features, like relatively speaking now. But in comparison to what it was, it is beautiful. So it's worth checking out if you've got a Debian-based distribution or you've got access to the Arch user repository. I don't think I can really make it any shorter than that. It's an MMO. What do you want from me?
What are you doing? Like, what's it setting? Is it free to play? Is it subscription based?
It is both. It is free to play. If you want some additional features and additional perks, then you can pay a subscription to do so. I don't know if this is true or not. I did hear or I read somewhere that if you don't have a paid subscription, then you can't play the game full screen. And that might just be a ridiculous lie that I've just picked up off some forum somewhere. But if that's true, that is ridiculous.
I was going to say, geez, not that that would matter to you seeing how you run stuff in windowed mode anyway.
Yeah, I would pay more money to have things not default full screen.
Tiling window managers for the win.
So it's got like a, I don't know, sort of medieval setting to it, does it?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's a medieval fantasy world. You create a character. You run around doing quests. You get items. You beef up your character. It's an expansive map. If you're on a subscription term, then you get access to more map areas and more quests and more items and stuff to do, as you might expect. It's interesting that they've actually managed to keep it going all of this time, I think. I remember first encountering RuneScape years ago when I was in high school, when I walked into the IT room and everyone was sad about playing it in their browsers, and that was the first time they ever saw it. But it's surprising that it's still going, that it's still popular, and more importantly, it is sort of available on Linux now officially. I mean, they did always have a sort of unofficial Linux client for the old system, which you can still use now. But now that it's supported officially, sort of, hopefully, it should be a good game. It looks like it could be a good game. Maybe not in comparison to some other MMOs. RuneScape fans might flay me alive for saying that, but when you stack it up against what we have available on Linux, it's got to be one of the better, more popular ones. Say one of the well-known ones.
Yeah, I was going to say.
So I'm reading about reworkings of the game engine called RuneScape 2 and RuneScape 3. Is that like still the same servers though? Am I reading that right?
I believe so. Yeah, because I think I'm probably remembering this wrong because it's been a long time, but I think that they were just re-implementations of the same Java system that they always had going on. Yeah, so things like RuneScape 2, I think, were project names rather than subsequent releases. Yeah, they're just enhanced versions that rolled over to continue to be known as just RuneScape, as far as you can see here. So NXT for graphical improvements, mainly. Draw distance and the ability to see players and NPCs from a lot further away than you could before. Fully dynamic lighting and shadows, improved water and wave mapping, fog augmentation. You can use MSAA, and I think you can still use FXAA as well, though it requires so little resources, I don't see why you would need to. You've now got other improvements to the interface that I remember being a real pain when I played RuneScape years ago. Like interacting with the minimap and the ability to look around the world map and see exactly where you're going and where you need to be. It's just sort of dragging it more into the current day, I guess. I mean, in terms of tech specs, it's still behind the times, but for RuneScape, it is a massive leap forward. It does look a lot prettier.
Looks cool.
Yes, it definitely. RuneScape has needed an update for a while. Engine update, let me rephrase this, for a while, and the fact that they're finally doing one is actually really good. I also enjoy the fact that, you know, there is the Linux support there, which is always nice to see. And like Karen, you said that other than I think Albion Online, there really isn't that many like big MMOs.
Yeah, Albion Online is the only other one that I can really think of. Yeah, I mean, surely there must be others. Are there not others?
I know there are others. Like, those are the only two that I can think of. This, RuneScape and Albion are the only two I can think of off the top of my head.
I mean, I know there's a load of RPGs, but I mean, like, specifically MMO RPGs. I know that you can run a bunch of them in Wine. Like, I know World of Warcraft will run in Wine pretty well. I know that Guild Wars 2 has a whole guide on the Guild Wars wiki about how to get it running in Wine, but you won't have any luck if you're using an ATI chipset, at least at the moment, that's for sure. You need to use an NVIDIA chipset and the proprietary driver, or you will get nowhere from the get-go. And even then, if you're going to run Guild Wars 2 in Wine, like if you've never tried it before, then here's the benefit of my experience. Use a VM to download the game files, or a Windows partition if you have one, because otherwise the launcher will just crash on you every 10 minutes and you have to sit and watch it and restart. And that doesn't sound too bad, but when you're downloading 86 gigabytes of game, it's a real pain that you can't just leave it running without it crashing.
Yeah. Always glad to see more games coming up with new features, functions, or updates, especially when it's Fortnite.
It's nice to see something with a bit of history like this that's been kept live.
Yeah. Because, I mean, this came out in, what, 2000, 2001, around there?
2001, I think.
Yeah, so the fact that this game is still going after going on 15 years said something about it.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good if you've managed to keep it going that long.
Granted, before the engine update, it also looked like a game from 15 years ago, too, but...
Yeah.
Valve fixes the overlay problems and when running on Vulkan. Oh, man.
So I don't even know if I have a Vulkan-capable card, but I had no idea that there were problems with the overlay.
Basically, Liam had put up a comparison of Vulkan and OpenGL, and for the newest driver with Talos Principle. And yeah. What had happened was you'd have a pretty consistent OpenGL performance across the board. You know, Vulkan's still fairly new. You would get some pretty big frame rate hits if you called up the Steam overlay while running on the Vulkan side of things. And it wasn't like, you know, five frames. It was like 10, 15. Some of them I noticed there was like 20 to 30 frame drops. I'm like, that is bad. So apparently they have fixed that, though.
Yeah, so it's now outperforming OpenGL, isn't it?
Yes.
On that particular game, anyway.
On that particular game, generically, it is outperforming OpenGL. For something that is still currently, quote-unquote, I can actually call this a beta project and actually mean that it's like beta 1 project, not beta, like, final. As most game companies now like to call a beta or an RC version of a game a beta, this is a good sign. It gives me hope for Vulkan. It really does.
And props to Valve as well for addressing the overlay problem so quickly. Yeah, no, they did it in like a matter of a day or two, didn't they?
I think it was a day. I was just like,
that's the thing. If you catch the eye of someone at Valve, if someone at Valve is excited about doing something, things happen fast.
So we need to get people like excited at Valve more often then. Like, thank you for finally fixing the game filtering in SteamOS so I don't show Windows games. Because I'm pretty sure you don't show all my Windows games when I download the Steam client and put it on Linux systems. You show me Linux games only first.
Yeah. Oh, it still does. You know that thing where it assembles a list of games and it'll think you like? I forget what they call it.
Oh, the recommendation?
Yes. That still tries to sell me Windows games. And I wouldn't mind so much if I had a Windows partition somewhere that it had seen me sign in on, you know, any time in the last couple of years, but I don't. I just don't. It just surprises me that they haven't, you know, tweaked that into their process yet, that if none of the clients that you've signed in on are on a particular operating system, then why would you try and sell games to that person for that operating system? It's like if it were trying to sell me games for a Mac. I've never owned a Mac in my life.
I really do think this shows a lot of promise with Vulkan, and this is only, again, a beta project. Like, this is a project still in its infancy, really. I mean, as far as, in comparison to, when compared to, like, OpenGL or DirectX, as far as, you know, graphics, APIs and stuff, like, this is a new project.
It's nice to see that progress, though. It's nice to see that happening and some performance increases coming from it. It gives me hope for the future, which is precious.
Are you saying you're a pessimist?
A little bit, yeah.
I get a distinct feeling somebody is saying that.
I think if you expect the worst, then you will never be surprised, apart from in a good way. So that's my philosophy.
You'll never be disappointed.
It's working for me. It's working for me.
So, Cheese, what are your thoughts on Vulkan and OpenGL and all that jazz?
Nothing since we last talked about it, really. I mean, looks like it'll be cool. It's not really going to make me much of a difference for me. It's interesting that it's been adopted by a whole bunch of big engines so quickly. Like, this is the first time we've ever seen this kind of tech deployed so fast in the history of gaming, I guess. But, yeah, interesting times. See where it leads.
Definitely be nice to see. So, we come up to another issue. Saints Row 2 and 3, or Saints Row 2 and Saints Row the Third, finally came out, which is great, because I love the Saints Row game. When they run, Virtual Programming has decided to set up a GitHub for the Saints Row 2's games. They're going to be a whole lot of bug reporting, I think.
Yeah, they are going to be flooded with issues. That's a thing that's going to happen, definitely, especially from the second one, as I've heard. I mean, I haven't actually played the third one on Linux yet. I played it on Xbox years ago. I have played the fourth one on Linux again, and I have played about a third of Get Out of Hell on Linux. They do run fairly poorly at times. Sometimes it's great, like, you wouldn't notice any difference, it's all good, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, there'll just be this huge frame rate drop and everything will grind to a halt, and the audio likes to go out of sync as well, which can be particularly frustrating, because the only way to stop it is to shut down the game and start it up again and pick up from where you left off, you know, which isn't a massive thing to do, but if you're playing the game over, say, a Saturday, you know, and you're playing it all afternoon or something, or all evening, then I would have to restart the game a good 7 or 8 times in a stint that long to keep the audio in sync more often than it wasn't. But they're very good games still. I still enjoy them.
Yeah, I was going to say, they are very good games. This isn't a knock on VP, because I'm of the mentality that I could care less how the game gets to Linux as long as it's on Linux, honestly.
And that it works.
But here's the rub. That it works, because if you look at some of their games, run fairly decently on, you know, they're, you know, people will point to The Witcher 2 when it first came out and be like, oh, it's all crap and that's all their stuff. That's not all their games. The Witcher 2 is very playable now on Linux. VP has actually been very good about the criticism that I think that gamers on Linux have sent to them and saying, hey, these are some issues. As I mean, what other porting, I don't want to say porting company, but what other technology company like that would set up a GitHub and say, like, help us fix this?
To be fair, they're still, they're developing Eon, aren't they? So aren't they trying to make their own wrapper technology as well as porting games at the same time? I mean, that's got to be a nightmare for them.
Yes, and that's the thing. It's just like, in a way, these guys actually get more respect for me because you threw up a GitHub. Like, you want to talk about getting open sourcey and stuff, there you go. I mean, for me, the game has to work. Even if it's only at, you know, PC gamers in general, you know, Linux, Windows, or OS X gamers, hate capped frame rates. You know, they want everything silky smooth at 60 frames a second. Whatever in spite of your resolution, you know, 4K, you know, 1440, 1080, whatever. they want it 60 frames a second all the time, and there are just some things that you have to realize that it's just not going to happen. The way some of these games are written, it could be part of the reason we don't get that silky smooth, you know, 60 frames. I would be content with these games running at 30 frames. Problem is, these apparently have a hard time even maintaining that.
They do at points, from what I've seen. I would say it runs at 30 frames or above two-thirds of the time. And the periodic dropouts, it can drop all the way down to, like, 2 at points. On mine, anyway. Like, just out of nowhere. You know, there's nothing... I know there are points, and it's not really fair to say in Saints Row 4, because Saints Row 4 was, in a way, built to be broken in that sense. I mean, when you get hold of the black hole gun, and you've got the infinite ammo, like, bolt on for your character, and you're just spamming them everywhere, of course it's going to grind to a halt. You know, there's no way that that's ever going to run smoothly on anything properly, but just wandering around the street, you know, with nothing particularly happening at all, and it'll just drop out on you, that's kind of frustrating right there.
Yeah, most definitely. So I'm hoping with VP setting up this GitHub that this does improve the quality of the overall Eon technology and the performance for Saints Row, because better Eon tech means better gaming performance for us. And whether or not you like it, that tech is still here from these porting houses, and that's just the way it is. And like I said, personally, I'm okay with that.
I think it'll get a lot better as time goes on. I mean, imagine they've opened this GitHub repo to gather up issues to help them develop their wrapper system properly. Yeah. Try and separate out, you know, what's actually going to be problems in the wrapper and what are problems in the port or the game itself, because they'll get a mix of everything, won't they, on the Steam forums.
Or getting helpful information on the Steam forums does help sometimes. It's porting through, it's like the rest of the internet. It's going through 90% of the other crap that you don't need. I look forward to seeing what happens with this, and I really do hope that there's improvements, because I love Saints Row 2. It's probably one of the worst ported PC games ever for any platform on PC, but I love the game in and of itself.
I've heard that the second one had problems on Windows as well. Like, so problems you experienced aren't necessarily Linux specific.
It is considered one of the worst Windows PC ports from console, like, ever.
What about Dark Souls 1? Like, in comparison to that, worse than that or better than that?
Okay, I own Dark Souls on Windows. Dark Souls was at least playable. This one, the two dropping down to 2 frames on a game, that happened even on Windows for Saints Row 2. So yeah, Dark Souls got a lot of the problems got fixed by either PC gamers modding it or by actually implementing good controller support. Because they had one of the most hack-eyed versions of mouse and keyboard I had ever played. Which was
it was all over the place. I could never get it to run myself. Like, it just flat-out refused for me.
That was Dark Souls' biggest problem on PC, was, like, the control support was just crap. Like, defaultly for, you know, like an Xbox 360 controller or mouse and keyboard, it was terrible. Yeah, buttons didn't register right. It was just like, oh my god. And the games for Windows Live, that was the other thing. Bad.
For a game like Dark Souls, especially, like the quality of the port is so important, because because of the difficulty curve of the game, you know, like, and how sensitive the players will be, like, whether it was their mistake or the game's mistake when they get murdered that particular time of several thousand. And yes, if the game's constantly causing you to die, you're just going to delete it and possibly smash up some of your hardware in the process.
So, speaking of, something about smashing up your hardware... Kerbal Space Program!
Yeah! Gets Kerbal Space Program.
One more.
It's awesome.
Honestly, I cannot speak about this game because I have not played it.
Really? Jeez, have you played it?
I've played like 5 minutes and went, this is really sweet. I'm looking forward to coming back to it at some point.
and at some point, it has not happened yet.
No, it hasn't. It does look really sweet. I got it, and I didn't want it on Steam, but then they weren't doing a good job of maintaining the Linux version in a format that I could run, because I'm not running a Debian-based distro, and eventually I got a Steam key, and never got around to playing it after getting it on Steam. But yeah, it does look pretty cool. I'm looking forward to, at some point, when I have time to sink into it, checking it out.
Oh yeah, well now, what I say now, after this point with this update, is probably the best time to get into it. Because from what I gather, part of this update, they have redone the interface, they've redone the tutorial system, which was god-awful. Like, it was really bad. It took me hours to... I actually had to take notes, because, like, the tutorial system, for example, it would be telling you, you know, how to get into orbit and how to adjust your orbits and such like that, and it'd say, right, okay, you need to go... This symbol means that this is the perigee and this is the apogee and such like that, but it would tell you what the symbols mean. And then you would have a good several pages of text, like, on different panes, and you couldn't go back to read ones that you've been at before, you know, until you actually got to the point where you would need those symbols. So it was like, oh, yeah, you know, point your ship towards the perigee or something like that. And you'd be like, oh, which one was that? I have no idea. I actually had to make little doodles of which one was what so that I could remember and actually be able to fly the ship. So I'm hoping a lot of that has been solved if they've redone the tutorial system. And they say they've introduced something that they've called KSpedia, which I gather is just going to be, you know, a wiki in the game full of all the information about how to do everything that you can get at from any point, which will probably make the curve of getting into it a lot easier. It's really simple once you've gotten past, you know, the introduction to it and how all the controls work and what you're supposed to be doing, but it is really intimidating. Up until that point, it just looks like so baffling, all the buttons and numbers and symbols and stuff that you've got to keep track of. But the one thing I'm sad to see, it didn't appear in this update, and I'm not sure whether it's still happening or not, and I know there is a mod for it, but bear with me on this. I saw the guys that make Kerbal, they put out a tweet a year ago now, just over, saying that they intended to bring multiplayer support out of the box to Kerbal, and they said that they were going to look at it after version 1, and I can't see anything about it in the release notes for this update, and they haven't said anything about it since that I've seen in any kind of announcement, so I'm still hoping that that's going to happen, because I think the game would be brilliant as multiplayer. When you start getting out into the system and traveling to other planets and stuff, I think it would be really, really fun to be able to set up bases and fly about with your friends and, you know, do missions together as opposed to it being entirely a single-player campaign. And I think that's pretty much all I can really say about it. If you guys haven't played it, for shame. For shame. It's been on Linux for ages.
I was going to say,
I own it.
I will admit shame.
I think this is the first time and probably the only time that'll have ever happened. I've played something that you guys haven't.
I don't know.
I've even got it installed. It's sitting here. It's waiting for me.
Yes.
You should check it out. It's really cathartic in many respects. It's a nice, chilled game. And, you know, you have some pretty amusing points in it. It took me hours to figure out how to get them back to the planet without them just exploding. And many times got the little Kerbal stuck in orbit for like 13 years by their time, you know, so they were long dead in that capsule by the time it came back to the ground.
but they did come back to the ground.
Oh, but it is a good game. You should definitely check it out. Yeah, like, anyone that hasn't played it, I'd recommend it. Yeah, like, sure. Now more than ever, if they've redone the tutorials.
I don't know. I've just seen it and seen, like, the little... It reminded me of Lemmings, almost. But with spaceships.
Not quite. They're not so obedient as Lemmings.
But no, like my point is, it's like, you look at different ways that they end up dying.
I guess there's a fairly short list of the ways they'll die. Either you'll smash them into a planetary body, or they will die in the capsule in orbit, or they'll get lost in space, or they'll run out of air and, you know, die of exposure to a vacuum.
Or your rocket blows up and falls back to the ground.
I actually managed to get myself lost on the moon with it, because you can EVA and go and wander out and float in space and stuff with, you know, take control of one of the Kerbals, and they have a little rocket pack, and yeah. I didn't notice that it has finite fuel, so like I shot off towards the horizon, and you're looking at hours of walking back to your ship. If you manage to do that, you might not even make it, so like be warned. There, don't be as careless as I.
Speaking of things crashing, like games crashing to a desktop, their community, you guys decided to show your desktops, so to speak. So, did you guys post for this yet, showing off your rigs or desktop?
I haven't yet, but I'm like totally uploading one right now.
I did not post one. I probably won't. My desk is covered, and I do mean covered, in notes, and I am not moving them for love nor money. I need to make my way through them in the order in which they were scattered across the desk.
I was going to say, I have no shame, and yes, like whatever was on my desk at the point was pretty much what was going to be in that photo. For those that are wondering, yes, I think I had four monitors. And well, okay, two monitors and two laptops at the moment.
Yeah, I'm like looking through my photos at the moment. I don't have anything that's got like laptops and stuff set up. I've only got like a shot of my just my two desktop monitors. But yeah, I got a whole bunch of computers all running at once.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say. Well, that one was because I was actually working on one laptop. I use as my test laptop for like various Linux distros. Like right now I think it's running Elementary. Gaming rig is my dual monitor setup, and Kieran, you've seen the bastardized stubby laptop that I have for the
I have seen. It's weird. It's really weird.
for those that are wondering, it's a Toshiba Satellite U845W. It's a 21:9 aspect ratio laptop. Just because I want to be different. Which currently right now is running 1604 for Ubuntu.
I couldn't tolerate such a monitor.
What, the Ubuntu or the 21:9?
Both, to be honest. I couldn't deal with either of them. I'd lose my patience with both.
Do note, the only reason Ubuntu is installed on this is because it's the only one that plays nice with the hardware.
Oh, that's what happens when you get weird hardware.
How is that even possible, though? Like, Ubuntu doesn't have any Ubuntu-specific drivers. Like, it's got access to the same kernel and the same drivers as every other distro.
I have no idea. It wouldn't. Every other distro would not install and had issues with it. So I'm just like, you know what? Whatever. I'll try another one and see how well it works. And hey, it works. So I'm like, whatever.
X must not like it for some reason, or maybe Canonical have stuffed a script in there that's better at detecting odd screen resolutions, perhaps? I don't know.
Whatever. All I cared about was that it got me A, off Windows 10, and A, let me actually have it at least Linux-type stuff on it, even if it is Canonical. But again, I guess I could say I could run Ubuntu in Windows 10.
No. That is verboten. You're not allowed.
So going back to the thread, I thought it was really interesting to see, not only pictures of people's desktops and stuff, but people talking about like comparing their hardware and stuff. You know, people asking, "Oh, what mouse is that?" And you know, "What screen is that?" And sort of talking about, you know, different bits and pieces that people have got running on Linux. It's really nice.
Yeah, I was gonna say I enjoy seeing like There's one of them where someone had a mechanical keyboard and two flat screens. They were like the old like IBM, you know, mechanical keyboard from like, you know, the 80s, and it was just like seeing that kind of stuff is just like, it's awesome to see, because it's like then, oh crap, who there was another one where his computer case was his desk.
Yes, this is what I'm looking at here. Pete910, I think is his name here. Yeah.
Pete910. That is just, like, so cool.
It's an interesting desk. So much space on it. I'm really jealous of that. I never have enough space on my desk.
You can never have too much space on a desk.
There are a lot of people that have... There's a lot of Rocket hardware, which I guess makes sense. Like, I never realized just how much Rocket hardware there was out there that everyone was using. I just use a keyboard and mouse, like any old keyboard and mouse. I don't care as long as it works.
I was going to say, I think right now I'm using some no-name keyboard and I'm using a Razer mouse.
I don't even have a brand-name mouse. It's some, what's it called? Zenta wireless rechargeable optical mouse made in China, missing all of its skates now.
But no, I love seeing this is the cool thing about, I'm not just going to say Linux in general, but like computing, like personal computing, like desktops, laptops, you know, tablets, whatever. That's the cool thing I love seeing, though, is just like the variety of stuff that people use, because it is so all over the place. You know, what someone might not see as working for them, you know, their particular use case, someone else finds a use for, which is that kind of stuff. I love seeing that kind of stuff.
Holy Christ, there's a monitor here that's worse than your laptop, Matt. Top one on page 3.
Is that the one with the CRT?
No. It's a flat screen. It looks curved, actually.
Oh, it's probably, it might be an LG then. Oh, yeah, that's a curved LG. That would be, I think that's their 31-inch curved LCD.
That is a huge monitor.
Oh, no, sorry, 38-inch curved Philips.
I thought that handles full screen. That can't go well.
I can speak only from my 21:9 aspect ratio experience. It actually doesn't do that bad.
Yeah, I'm surprised at that. I know it must stretch it, but
let's put it this way. It almost makes the design decisions that Canonical did for Unity almost make sense. Almost. Because I ended up leaving the bar off to the left side as opposed to moving it down to the bottom, which I can do now. But, like I said, I love seeing all this different hardware and stuff. This is what makes me love technology and, you know, computing and obviously Linux, because this is the open ecosystem type stuff that's awesome about. Because some people have, like, really nice, posh, you know, clean, and, you know, some people have, like, these destroyed desks with, like, work all over it. It's just, like, it's really nice to see that it's, like, this is my picture and I really don't care if you don't like it.
I'm quite surprised that you've got your Unity launcher on the left-hand side of your really wide screen, and this person does as well. And if I had a monitor that was that wide, especially in 16, now you can move it to the bottom, why would you not have it at the bottom and have a really, really long launcher that you could fill with all the things, and then you'd never, ever have to go on the Ubuntu menu ever again, and it would be wonderful.
I can only speak on the laptop portion because of the screen size. It's not obviously a 38-inch curved 21:9. It takes away, because I auto-hide the bar. Like, I only use it, and I think I have, like, a longer delay than they normally allot for it by default when you auto-hide it. If you have it on the bottom, at least on this laptop, again, speaking only on this, it takes up too much room on the bottom so that things lose you call up the bar when you don't want to. It's almost like when you auto-hide the taskbar in Windows. And, like, you'll try to move a window or something, and you'll end up calling up the stupid, taskbar. And it's like, I didn't want the taskbar. I was trying to move the goddamn window or expand it or, you know, whatever. It's kind of the same thing.
That makes sense, of course, yeah.
Because, obviously, I have more vertical, I have less vertical space, but I have more width, which is
right,
nice.
Right, that's why you kind of stick things on the sides, is because you want to eat up the space that you've got lots of rather than the space you don't have much of.
Exactly. So, now granted, it makes trying to do side-by-side stuff, you know, with the window handling and the snapping of windows. That can get a little weird if the delay's wrong on the or whatever, the dash, whatever the hell they want to call it. Same thing. So that can make it a little weird, but overall, it works for what on this hardware.
On page 4, just, about two-thirds of the way down, there's one by a guy called EKR Boy, and
yeah,
this rig is beautiful. That is, I want it.
Yeah, I think I've played Guns of Icarus with that guy a couple times, and yeah, he's got a cool setup.
It's really, really nice cooling rig.
Speaking of which, that's another game we need to try.
Yes. I keep meaning to try out Guns of Icarus more. I've only ever sort of gone on and messed about with the practice mode a bit. But it looks really fun if you can get into it. They actually play with some people that aren't going to scream at me.
No, actually, Corbin's setup on the last page is pretty cool as well.
Holy hello.
Last page.
Curved desk. That is a cool setup, though. Not going
to
lie.
I like that he had to take, I think that's 3 photos joined there. It's like a big panoramic shot.
Yeah, but still, that is cool.
Oh, that's awesome. I could while away weeks in there without having to leave.
I thought that's what you did already, Kira.
It is pretty much what I do already. The coffee machine's downstairs, but with desks like that, I could keep the coffee machine next to me.
Well, technically, you could keep it next to you even if you wanted to, but, you know.
I would kick it over. I would kick it over, and the water would go in all the equipment, the house would set on fire, and oh, no, it's a bad idea.
Keep it up.
It's always really curious to look at other people's stuff. Like, I like seeing threads on forums where people say, you know, I'll post a screenshot of your desktop as well. I don't know, I have some strange fascination with it. It's like when you go around to a friend's house who you don't really know that well for like a party or something like that, and you get the opportunity to poke your head inside their bedroom and see how they really live.
Yeah. Well, it gives you a glimpse into the person that they are, which I think is what, because it's the internet and, you know, anonymity and all that stuff, you really don't really get much of a chance to see that very often.
I just took a photo now while we're recording and posted my own in the thread, and looking at the Oculus Rift first impressions video I did in 2013, it doesn't look like my desktop has changed much at all.
It's fairly organized, much more organized than mine is. I like a lot of people have these really clean workstations here, and I really like that, and I prefer that personally, but in practice it never works for me. I'll clean everything up once a year, and then it'll get covered in notes and just work in general, and it becomes cables and like bits of hardware everywhere I've pulled out of machines and just dumped on the desk.
Oh, I got like, if you actually look behind my monitors, I got so many cables kicking around, like, I'm just like, yeah, whatever, I don't care.
Is that an Apple keyboard you're using, Cheese?
Yeah, I use the Slimline Apple aluminium keyboard. I really like the action on it. And there's also an Apple Mighty Mouse sitting on the side over there. I was playing, God, what was it? XCOM 1. Or XCOM 1, your new XCOM. Co-op with someone, and so I had extra keyboards and mice plugged in, so that's what that mouse is doing there.
I hate that Apple mouse. I hate them with a passion. That's the one with the ball bearing scroll wheel thing going on, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
I kind of like it. I like the trackball scroll.
Jeez, is that a MacBook scroll?
It is.
It is. I see an Apple logo. You've put a post-it over it, trying to be sly, but
There was a post-it note sitting on it. Yes.
It's a cover logo.
I didn't put
logo.
It there. It's just where it was.
A likely story.
Sure.
But no, I run macOS on that because I need to test to make sure that my games and stuff run on macOS.
Oh, yeah, obviously. I know, I'm just giving you a hard time.
And also, like, in terms of battery life versus weight versus, you know, small form factor, that was kind of the best thing that I could find.
Fair enough. Are the batteries replaceable in those, or is it sealed unit?
No, it's a sealed unit. It sucks.
Faraway technology. Thank you, Apple.
Yeah, I don't think it has... Yeah. No, it's got screws in the bottom. I could probably pull it apart and get a new battery in there if I want, but nothing that's easily removable.
No,
I bet the battery is the last thing left after you pull out the motherboard, you know.
I was going to say, knowing Apple's designing, you'll end up having to pull out the motherboard first, then the battery or something.
Yeah, I did a hard drive replacement in an old iBook a while back, and literally the battery was the last thing left in the chassis. That was the last step. You had to remove the keyboard and the motherboard and the battery and everything else, and the hard drive was the last thing. One of the things that you're going to most likely need to upgrade, because it was a mechanical drive rather than solid state, so it was your mechanical drives and portability tools, they don't do so well. and it's the least accessible component in the entire thing.
How many screws did you have left over when you put it back together again, or is that just me?
No, I'm pretty good like that. But there was a step that was all, remove these 14 screws. This is one step.
You mind showing me where they all are? Or this one is you'll get the one that's underneath something and attached to the keyboard, and you're wondering why the hell you're almost breaking the keyboard apart.
Oh, God.
I like that. The way all the screws have the same head, but they're all different lengths.
I always end up doing that thing with laptop keyboards where you think you've got all the screws out, so you stab something under the keyboard and try to prise it a little bit and see how much resistance there is. Does it look like it's about to snap? Are there hidden screws left in the chassis somewhere?
Apparently.
I thought it was interesting that there was not much in the way of lounge room setups for people who are, gaming in the lounge room on a TV or whatever.
You mean actual, I don't want to say... PC console gaming?
Yeah. I think Liam posted his Steamos box that he's got set up in the corner of the room.
Well, let's be honest, a lot of PC gamers, that is never going to be how they are.
It depends. I use a console PC setup, but then that's another reason that there's no point in taking any pictures of that, because all you see is a picture of a TV. The box is, way to the side. So, unless you want a picture of a TV that's switched off,
Yeah.
They have their advantages. We've
got a dedicated machine now for lounge room stuff, and it's a laptop that's hooked up to a projector, so it's, again, not much interest when it's turned off.
Exactly. Unless you're going to get into, unless you've got something nice and fancy, everything I have is pretty standard, hidden away and or covered in notes. So, it's not really good taking any pictures of that. But I think the console PCs, they have disadvantages in comparison to using your typical gaming PC rig, but they also have advantages as well. I really enjoy being able to sit anywhere in the room and play what I want with my Steam controller on a TV, and I don't have to get up or use anything else in most of the time, in theory. Occasionally you get a game coming along that's guess what, plug in a keyboard and put this arbitrary piece of information in now. And, you can't use the Steam on-screen keyboard for that because it'll demand you use some special character that isn't supported by the on-screen keyboard. But that happens quite rarely, but it does happen. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. And thank you very much, guys.
It's been fun.
It has.
It's always fun. So you guys can catch us hopefully again in 2 weeks from now, whenever this comes out, hopefully this week. And we will be looking to talk about playing certain games together.
Yeah, it'd be fun. Mm-hmm.